And it hits me, oh my gosh, this is that triangle.
You know, there's explanation for everything that occurred in the Rendlesham Forest incident that doesn't involve aliens at all.
It was completely silent. It comes right over our heads.
It's so classic flying saucer, really, standing in a clearing.
He turned over to my father and held his hand, and he looked in his eyes and he said, "We're not alone."
Welcome to Podcast UFO for our live show. During the show, feel free to participate live in our chat room. And don't forget to like us on our very active Facebook page.
Hello, and welcome to the show. I'm Martin Willis, your host. And we have another great show for you this evening. We have Joe Murgia, known as UFO Joe. You've got to check out his blog. It's really a great blog. And that is actually at ufojoe.net. A lot of great articles, very good insight. And before that, I have Alejandro Rojas coming up with the UFO updates. I did want to tell everyone, we have a new number we're going to be trying out for the first time tonight with a call screener. And that number is 85KGRA Live. Write it down. I will put it up, though, for people in YouTube. And that's 855-472-5483. And that, again, that number will be displayed during the show. So coming up, you know how I had to do a rerun recently? It looks like I'm going to have to do something like that, but I'm not really sure because I'll be landing, I believe, in Phoenix when this show is supposed to go live on the 3rd of September. So we're going to work something out. I'm definitely going to do a show at the UFO Congress live, some type of roundtable. It just won't be on Tuesday night. So you people on YouTube and the podcast listeners, don't be discouraged. It will be happening, a live show that week. Should be another great one, as usual. They always are there. And I think, besides thanking everyone that listens to the show and the supporters of this show, I'm about done, and I'm ready to call in Alejandro Rojas. Welcome to the show, Alejandro.
Hello, hello. Looking forward to Martin's famous live International UFO Congress
show. That's right.
Show.
Yes, every year, and attended by so many. This time I'm going to really it's always interfered with, you know, the dinners and things like that. So since I can't have it on the night I want to have it on anyway, I'm going to try to do it the most flexible time for more people to show up, because that's the reason you couldn't show up, for one.
Yeah, exactly.
Right in the middle of the dinner that you have to be at.
Yeah. I'm on stage while you're doing that. And, of course, our dinner is a Meet the Speakers dinner, and then here you are taking speakers away from
not only
their dinner, but their beloved guests.
You've always really appreciated that. So it'll be different this year anyway. So, but looking forward to that, and we can talk a little bit about that, but I know we have a ton of news this week, right?
Yeah. So swamped with UFO Congress stuff. Yeah, we could get to that if we have a chance. But
sure.
There is a code, 10% off if you use the code KGRA. So since we're on KGRA, it's appropriate. If you go to UFOCongress.com, you can get that discount. But like you said, there's been a lot of news. And one of the pieces of news that you and I haven't spoken of on your show before, and I just wrote something on the Roswell Daily Record about it, is this congressman who wrote a letter asking the Navy for more information about UFOs. This is Representative Mark Walker from North Carolina, and he is on the House Subcommittee of Homeland Security and the a ranking member of the Subcommittee on Intelligence and Counterterrorism. Why is that important? That's important because he's saying that in these positions, you know, what you're describing or what these Navy pilots are describing seeing is something unidentified, something we don't know what it is. And if it's unidentified, that's a security issue, and we need to know more. Specifically, he's asking if these accounts are true, you know, then are they investigating them? He notes that, according to the New York Times article, that the DOD said they canceled the Pentagon's UFO program, the one that we only found out about because a guy who used to run it, Luis Elizondo, came out and told us about it. So he says, if you canceled that program, why aren't you investigating these? You need to be. So are there any other programs like ATIP that exists? He's asking, you know, if not, who investigates them? Why aren't you investigating him if you don't? And if you do, what have you found? And are the Chinese involved? And so let me get into a couple of these, because really the ATIP question and the Chinese one are particularly interesting. It seems he's referring to the Chinese working on this technology because of a patent that the Navy had submitted. And Tyler Rogaway from The Drive has written a lot about this. And these weird patents really describe technology that is kind of theoretical and were going to be not approved for that reason. However, the COO or the CFO of the Navy wrote in and said, hey, these are legit. And these are technologies that the Chinese are already working on. And because of this letter, they got approved. So that's really interesting. So Walker's asking, what do you mean the Chinese are working on this? We're not aware of these, you know, technologies beyond our own when it comes to defense that the Chinese have. The other question that I think is interesting he asked, of course, is about ATIP. He said, hey, if you close ATIP, aren't you looking into this anymore? And if you close them, who's looking into it? Well, according to Luis Elizondo, ATIP never did close. When he resigned, he said that he had a successor. He told me personally that this is a high-level person that took over for him and that the program continues, although under another name, because now that the name ATIP is out there, you know, they want to have a level of security for the program, so they've changed the name. So these are a lot of interesting questions as of yet, and this letter was submitted July 16th, that's when it's dated. There has not been any answer that we are aware of, so this is a very interesting situation. One other note on this is that MJ Banias wrote a great article for Vice News, which is cool that he's writing for them, about UFOs. And the gist of his article was that the Walker letter is definitely inspired by the work of To the Stars and Tom DeLonge, and that, you know, the letter demonstrates that, you know, this they're paying attention to what To the Stars are doing. So that's a great article by MJ and Vice also.
You know, for the people that are, you know, are conspiring or saying that it's a conspiracy, that, you know, this whole To the Stars and all that is, you know, just like you said, smokescreen or whatever, another CIA situation. Wouldn't they would just simply, you know, Walker would have never written that, is what I'm getting at. I would think that would be, you know, part of the case for saying that whatever they're doing is, you know, is substantiated, because, you know, in a person in his level would never, you know, write something like that if this was, you know, indeed like a conspiracy to for, you know, high tech objects or whatever. Do you understand where I'm going with this?
Kind of. I kind of, well, the main conspiracy that, yeah, although I think that that's what's tough about a lot of these UFO conspiracies is that it's really impossible to work at the levels that these people think that, like, all these senators would be involved, where these representatives and these media people would all be involved with some kind of major conspiracy. I mean, it's just these organizations and corporations are so separate from each other and work so separately that that is unrealistic. So, however, there's another story going on here that I think is getting overlooked, and you've got the perfect guest on tonight to talk about a lot of this. Joe, UFO Joe's great. So it'll be great to get his insight on this. But we definitely are seeing pushback. We are seeing the results of information getting out to the public that wasn't intended to get out. Louise has faced a lot of opposition internal from all sides because he was sharing information that wasn't supposed to be shared. So this is an example. This is essentially one congressman saying, hey, we didn't know about this. You know, you need to tell us more, which is exactly why they didn't want, you know, this sort of information out. I don't think it's along the lines of in order for us to keep secrets, at least related to ATIP, but it was along the lines of we're not prepared to share information, nor are any of the agencies that you're discussing or talking about. The DOD has not been cooperative with Luis Elizondo and To the Stars. They have denied much of what Luis Elizondo has said, although they have pretty much in almost every instance had to say, okay, we were wrong, and Elizondo was right. In many instances, they've had to do this. So they obviously have not been too happy with Lou and his revelations, nor have they been cooperating with it. So if you're paying attention to really what's going on with all these various groups and organizations and with the media and everything, you've got a lot of different players, and you've got information that has entered kind of this arena that wasn't supposed to, and not everybody's happy about it. And I think it's a much more interesting story when you look at, you know, all of these details.
You know, do you think there's some like gray areas between what can be talked about and what's classified that he is, you know, skirting on the edge of, and that's why they're getting
definitely
upset?
Yeah, that's a big issue. Lou has said he's got to be careful. Every word that he says is scrutinized. He feels that they are listening, and if he does, you know, mention anything that is classified, he'll get in trouble and they'll pounce all over that. He doesn't think he's going to get a break, so he's careful there, which is a kind of actually, it makes it a dangerous situation for him to be out in the public. Some people might, I think it's important to note, Lou Elizondo is not the To the Stars PR guy. He's not the spokesman, and that wasn't the intention. He's the security guy for To the Stars. Of course, he's been kind of the lead investigator for the television show Unidentified, and it's worked out that way because everybody wants to hear from Lou. He's the guy who worked on the Pentagon program, so he's the one, of course, naturally, that everybody's going to want to hear from. But it adds another dynamic I think people have to think of. But there are also other levels. There's classified information, but there's also information that is not classified that Lou and or the group are aware of, but they also, or at least Lou, is not willing to share because it's not his information to share, as he puts it. That is information that was generated or is in the control of other agencies or departments, and he feels that it's not, he would be stepping on toes to release that information, so he doesn't. What's interesting is, journalists, especially George Knapp, has been out there finding some of this material and getting it out there. I think he says he's, worked closely with people in Washington. We know that he's visited Reid, and I think Harry Reid's office has been helpful in helping him find some information. So he has been able to leak some of this information that I think Lou was aware of, but unwilling to, get out there on his own because he doesn't want to. He's still very loyal to his friends and his colleagues that are on the inside. He's certainly loyal to the oath he took not to share anything classified. So you're right. There's lots of gray areas. There's lots of he has to be very careful when it comes to all of that.
I know there's a lot to talk about, and I'm kind of focusing on this. But in someone in his position, if they do share something classified, is there a pension and things, how much trouble can they get in, and does it depend on what they share?
I'm no expert on that, but from what I understand and from what I, looking at other cases, that yes, it depends on what you share, the level of secrecy. So, for instance, classified isn't as important as secret or top secret. However, some of these people, even the stuff that was released to WikiLeaks was mostly on classified servers, not secret or top secret, because a lot of diplomats have access to these databases that have classified information. And that's exactly, what was tapped into with WikiLeaks. So there are different levels. There's also different levels of how you obtain the information. That's sort of the problem with some of the information that was obtained by the Russians. Essentially, those methods were illegal, even if they are human engineering. And human engineering, of course, is something like calling up and saying, "Hey, I'm Martin Willis, and I forgot my password. Could you give me my password?" So, where I'm pretending to be you. That's still illegal. There are a lot of nuances when it comes to that. But we've seen, from leakers in the past, they can face, getting in a lot of trouble. I think they're risking their pension and, of course, jail time.
Right. Okay, well, we ran out of time as far as talking about the UFO Congress, so let's focus on that next week, unless we get a huge, like someone lands on the White House lawn or something. Let's talk about that next week.
You mean
week.
Someone like is catapulted over the fences and lands on the lawn? That would be an interesting story.
Take me to your leader type of thing. Yeah. All right, Alejandro, thanks so much, and I'll be talking to you next week.
All right. Talk to you later.
All right. Okay, so our guest today, Joe Murgia, and he is known as UFO Joe, real interesting guy. I do hope that everyone runs and checks his blog out. I'll have that in the show notes. And he's been a freelance camera operator for about 16 years. For seven seasons, he was the director of photography for the History Channel's Pawn Stars. He and I were talking a little bit about that. It's pretty interesting. And he has a really good background as far as all that goes. And today he writes and edits the UFOJoe.net blog with his focus on UFOs, TTSA, Tom DeLong, ATIP, and all kinds of interesting personalities in the field. And Joe, welcome to the show.
Martin, so great to be here. I'm so glad you invited me.
Yes. Well, we have a lot to talk about tonight, and I'm sure you were listening in with Alejandro and I, our conversation, so we can, go off of some of that as well. But why don't you tell the audience, this is the first time you've been on the show, and why don't you, if you would, tell the audience a little bit about your background and, what made you get this crazy interest of UFOs? Not so crazy anymore, but this interest of UFOs.
Sure. My first memory is of anything paranormal was going to the movies with my sisters, and neither one of them remember this, but I went to see a movie, The Legend of Bogey or Boggy Creek, and it was a Bigfoot docudrama. So basically, it was shot like a documentary, but it was scripted. So I saw that, and the opening feature was a UFO documentary. So I was young. I was like 8 or 9, and It definitely made an impression on me. I mean, I can remember scenes to this day, and I've only seen that movie once. So it made an impression. And then after that, I saw Close Encounters of the Third Kind, which I think was 77, if I'm right.
Yeah, somewhere around there. Mm-hmm.
Loved it. I mean, I loved it. I had the T-shirt. But I didn't know there was a way to like follow up on that, like read books on it. I had no idea there was people that researched it. So I kind of dropped it. But along the way, I watched, remember the show, Leonard Nimoy, In Search Of?
It was
one of my favorite shows.
That was great.
All that stuff. So once again, didn't realize that you actually can research or read about that. And then it came up again in the mid-90s. Somebody I know said, hey, a relative of mine is having experiences with this being, and it's on the cover of the book Communion. You should read it. So I bought it, and I read it. And I didn't know what it was about. I started reading it, and it was like really scary stuff. I'm like, this stuff's really scary. These people are being abducted in the middle of the night. So I'm like, I don't want to read this. So I put it down. And like that night, I woke up on the couch not being able to move. I'm like, uh-oh, here come the aliens. They're coming to get me. And I was like paralyzed, which I think is some doctors call it sleep paralysis. Other people say it's like the first stage of an out-of-body experience. So whatever, nothing happened. And the next day I'm like, I'm going to take that as a sign to finish reading the book. So I did. I loved it. I read Transformation. I read Breakthrough. And I just, every metaphysical book I could get my hand on, I just started reading. And went down the rabbit hole. And it was like, and back then I had no filter. So everything I read, I believed. I'm like, yep, I believe this. Believe it all. Mm-hmm. And then as the years went on, somebody I worked with down in Florida, he would challenge me on a lot of the stuff I would bring up. He's like, you can't prove that. You have no evidence for that. And I was like, I'd go home and I'm like, you know what? He's right. So I started becoming more skeptical, putting a filter on a lot of things. And that's basically how I developed how I am now. But I kind of lost interest in UFO. Once I got heavy into the UFO stuff, I lost interest because there was nothing happening new. So I kind of let it go. I mean, I would pay attention, Phoenix Lights and stuff like that. But I wasn't looking at every UFO book and buying new books until I heard Tom DeLong do an interview, and I was like, I didn't know this guy was into UFOs. So I listened to him, and then I signed up on his Facebook page, and I'm like, all right, I'll pay attention. And then one night I heard him say, people need to listen to me because I have the real story and nobody else has the story that I have. And I was like, all right, that's a red flag for me. So I was like, I'm not going to pay attention. And then WikiLeaks happened, saw that he actually did have all these contacts within the government, started paying attention again. Somebody told me that they had seen the two videos that were about to be released. This was probably October after Luis Elizondo first went public. So I was excited about that. And then finally, December 16th, 2017 changed everything. And even though people today are saying nothing has changed, I don't think they're paying attention if they don't think things have changed, because that changed everything for me. I'm back in it as passionate as ever. And I know, I mean, you know, it's media. It's just a totally different ballgame now. So that's where I am now. And I started the blog somewhere in that time period, the last couple of years, I decided to start it up. I did have my own newsletter around 99, 2000, which I joke with Alejandro. It was called Open Mind News Newsletter. But I didn't follow up with it. I didn't stick with it.
Yeah.
So I just let it go. I let it go. And then I started the blog a couple of years ago.
Uh-huh. Well, it's a great blog. And, you know, just reading briefly through some of the stories there, it's very well done. Looks like you put a lot of effort and a lot of time into it and a lot of thought. And so as far as that goes, yeah, it really is kind of funny. You know, the December 16th story kind of shook everything up, changed everything. But it was actually, you know, before that, when the announcement was made, the same announcement was made, I think, in October of that 2017 as well. I watched the live stream there when Two of the Stars did that, you know, release. So basically, right, everything was out, but it's just when it hit the mainstream media, the New York Times, you know, such a prestigious paper to publish something like that. And, you know, their stance before on UFOs was always rather negative. So this was a big deal. And I've never seen such a change myself. I've said a number of times in the show, I'm not so scared or so embarrassed to talk about the subject, you know, when it comes up. Like, for instance, you know, around my profession, I'm not so worried about it anymore.
So. Yeah, I remember I watched the October 16th. I think it was mid-October. Watched it. I was excited. And then George Knapp went on Coast to Coast, and he gave this opening that had me so excited. And I transcribed it, and I put it on my Facebook page. I'm like, this is a big deal, guys. Everybody look forward to more coming out about this. And I got some feedback from people, because usually with the UFO stories, even now, most of my friends on Facebook will not respond to it. A couple of them will like it. Oh, that's interesting. But back then, people were, you know, interested to see what was going to come from that. And then, yeah, I'm the same way. New York Times, you can't. George Knapp has spoken about it. He could have broken the story, but he was asked to step aside and let the New York Times do it. And I understand, because, I mean, like you said, how much more prestigious can you get than the New York Times? And it just, that was it. Opened the door for a lot of us to talk about it and not worry about being mocked or being made fun of. Not that I really ever cared about that, but it's nicer now when you say, hey, did you see the New York Times article on the Pentagon UFO program that was on CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, and every other newspaper, Politico? And, you know, it's a lot easier now to have that as your backup.
That's right. I remember shortly after, I've talked about it on this show, you know, right after it happened, but just shortly after that article, it was actually on my way to the UFO Congress in that following February of 2018. And I was flying next to a guy that was not jump seating. What did they call it? He was a deadheading. He was a American Airlines pilot. And I mentioned to him, I asked him if he actually saw that article when it came out. He said, no, but I'll tell you one thing, UFOs are real. and he told me about this green orb that followed him when he was in an F-18 for, you know, many, many miles. It followed him. But anyway, I tried to get him to come on even anonymously on my show, but he refused to. But it was, So, I mean, it's a real icebreaker, you know, that article.
Definitely. And there are still people, you know, we talked about there's still jealousy out there, and there are people out there today that say nothing is really, you know, the initial burst of media was great, but ever since then, nothing really is new. Nothing has happened. I'm like, are you not paying attention? We just had the Navy change their policy about how pilots can report UFO sightings. We've had congressmen and senators talking about being briefed about UFOs. We've had the president of the United States being asked in the Oval Office by one of the top political reporters in the country about being briefed on UFOs. Yes, there has been new information since December 16th. So I'm still excited. I mean, yeah, we're going through a little bit of a lull right now, but that's fine because personally, I got to tell you, I cannot, when things are going strong, I can't keep up with everything. It's impossible to keep up with all the information. I'm like, I'm in trouble. I just can't write about all this stuff.
Yeah. Well, we are ready to go into our first break. So hang in, everyone. We'll be right back right after these messages. All right. So we were kind of wrapping that up more or less to move on something else. So on this break, I'll just ask you, where do you actually live?
I live in Las Vegas. I've been there. I moved there, started out in New York and then Florida for like 10 years, back to New York. And then 2005, moved out to L.A. And then 2009, a friend of mine called me and said, hey, I got a new show about a pawn shop. You want to come to Vegas? Uh-huh. I'm like, all right, I'll try it out. So I was there for 7 years. And then now I'm still in Vegas, mm-hmm. working on other stuff. Wow. You know, sports, reality and conventions. Vegas is a good market for television.
I bet. And also a friend of mine who actually had her own series on HGTV in the antiques world told me she came out of her hotel room in Las Vegas and her and her husband both watched a black triangle, a big black triangle, like float right past the city. Yeah. So I guess there's some UFO sightings. Do you hear a lot about that there?
I don't. I mean, some of the stuff I've seen is like nighttime high in the sky lights. I'm like, I really can't make out anything with that. And me personally, I've never seen anything. I've never seen anything like that was really, you know, that I would define as a UFO. I've seen stuff high, kind of going fast, but nothing that really said that is just, you know, that's amazing. That's something I've never seen before.
There's so many. There's so much light pollution in Las Vegas. It doesn't get any more brighter than that as far as light pollution goes.
Yeah,
you have to go way outside of the city to see anything like at night for the most part, right?
Yeah, it's not a great sky. I mean, I live in Henderson, which is like 15-20 minutes southeast. It's basically Vegas, but it's its own city, and it's a little better, but still, yeah, the strip ruins everything as far as night sky watching.
Right. And now I know, is it now George Knapp does live out there, right? I mean, isn't that where he's from?
George lives out there. John Alexander lives there. We got Bigelow. We got Harry Reid. So it's a nice little, you got some big names that live in Vegas in the UFO world.
Right.
I don't know if there's anybody else that I'm missing.
Well, we're going to talk about Harry Reid once we go back on live. I'd like to bring that up.
Okay.
But no, it's interesting. The weather out there is so clear and, you know, beautiful all the time or most of the time out there. So, yeah, if it wasn't for all the lights, there'd probably be a lot more sightings. I don't know where it rates in the States. Have you ever looked that up as far as sightings go?
I have not. I don't know where it rates. I have had friends who have had sightings in the city. I mean, you know, near the casinos.
Wow. I'm sorry. Race, are we ready to go back on?
We're ready to go.
All right. We're ready here.
All right, Joe, you ready?
I'm ready.
Martin, you ready?
I believe I'm ready, yes.
All right, here we go, my man. In 5, 4, 3, 2.
All right, welcome back. My guest tonight is UFO Joe Murguia. Joe, so we were pretty much wrapped up there at the break time, but I do want to talk to you about, I noticed that you did not an on-air interview, but you interviewed Harry Reid. So how did that come about?
Yeah, that's an interesting story. So I got an email. I received an email from somebody one day, and it was just asking, hey, we need a camera operator in Las Vegas on this day. Are you available? I'm like, let me check. Yeah, I'm available. Okay, it's did not tell me any details of what it was about. It was just a short shoot, half a day shoot. So I'm all right. So, and they got back to me in a couple of days. It said it's with a local politician. I'm like, great. No details once again who it was, and then the final email giving me direction to the office is like, oh, it's with Senator Harry Reid. I'm like, Oh, really? I'm like, perfect. I'm like, I'm gonna have to ask him about UFOs. But it wasn't the interview. It wasn't even an interview. It was him. Just it was somebody he knew was getting an award, and so he just had a, you know, say some things about he knew this person and what his experiences were with this person. And it was like it took 15 minutes. And when we were done, I said, "Is it okay if we talk about the UFO program?" And he was definitely a little hesitant, but he said, "All right, go ahead, let's go." So,
did was it. He shocked when you said that, or
did no?
You...
No, he wasn't shocked. Uh-huh. He wasn't shocked. But I was nervous, and I could have done a lot better as far as an interview. But he could tell he has a passion for it. I know people have questioned. You know, he was just giving money to Bigelow because he's friends with Bigelow. So that's why the program came about. And it's like, no, he has a real interest. And George Knapp has detailed all the way back to the Bob Lazar days of when Reed, first got interested in it. So, it was nice. He was great. And he didn't shy away from any questions or answering any questions. And I was lucky to get him to talk about that.
Yeah, and you can find that a transcript of that interview, right, on your webpage?
It's on my webpage. And, you know, I felt afterwards, I'm like, you know what, I could have done such a better job of that interview. So when he was on, I think it was KNPR, which is the Vegas PBS station, not PBS, Vegas Public Radio. I said, all right, let me ask him some questions. Because they would take email questions for the guests, and you can call in. So I got them to read one of my email questions. And I got the call in. So I'm like, all right, I made up a little bit for the questions I didn't get to ask him when I sat down with him.
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever got to hear that interview he did. But I definitely want to get more into when Elizondo was on Tucker Carlson. But it was related to that. I said to Reed, I said, you know, I quoted Luis Elizondo saying, Luis Elizondo said he believes that our government has in their possession a piece of a UFO.
He sort of did it. He said it in a roundabout way, if I remember right. Right.
I mean, yeah, we can. I mean, I have the transcript of that. I can go through real quick. But Reed was like, he said, "Yeah, I'm sorry. I just don't believe that." And who was it that told you? Who said that? And I had said it was Luis Elizondo off the bat. But they had cut my mic. They had already cut my call, so I didn't get to respond. Yeah.
Yeah. I know it. You had this was all off the cuff when you actually met him, so she had no time to prepare good questions. So I'm sure.
Well, I had some time. That's why I was mad at myself because I was nervous and it was just like, and I didn't want to push. You know, he had just recently had surgery, so I didn't know how much time we had. You know, so next lesson learned. But I don't want to ask you about this. What do you think? He said, "Do you believe?" Carlson asked Elizondo, "Do you believe, based on your decade of serving in the United States government on this question, that the U.S. government has in its possession any material from one of these aircrafts?" And he says, "Oh, I do. Yes." And then he says, Carlson says, "You think the U.S. government has debris from a UFO in its possession right now?" And he says, "Unfortunately, Tucker, I really have to be careful of my NDA. I really can't go into a lot more detail than that." So Carlson goes, "Okay." But then Elizondo still answers. He goes, "But simply put, yes." So it's almost like he, you know, if he's not allowed to talk about classified information, would you not consider that probably in the classified realm? I mean,
I would.
I would too. So he has to have permission to talk about that because nobody was expecting that. He had never spoken about that before that I know of, and it looked like he, you know, he could have just ended it. He could have said, in the past, he said stuff like, unfortunately, I can't answer that question, so we're just going to have to pass. He could have said that, but he answered. So to me, that's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And where did, you know, I was talking earlier with Alejandro about this. As far as the people that are just plain saying that he's a disinfo agent, they would probably say, well, that's all part of it. Did you hear that? Any grumblings of that?
Yeah, I have a little bit, and I kind of that would be an example of them being right, or at least something in that ballpark where it says, yeah, that could be, that makes sense, because it's so weird for him to just talk about a crash saucer. But then the follow up, which was great, Eric Davis is like, And Eric Davis added, Eric Davis said, Tucker Carlson questioned about the U.S. government is in possession of recovered, crashed, and landed UFO technology hardware is 1,000% accurate. So it's like, well, he didn't, Elizondo didn't talk about any landed UFO technology, but Eric Davis did. And Eric's great like that. Eric, right off the cuff, he's so passionate. He's the most passionate person on the subject. He'll just blurt stuff out. And I'm like, all right, great. It's great that we have him, that he's willing to talk so much.
Yeah. And have you actually spoken with Eric?
We communicate, and we've talked a lot about Bob Lazar. That's how I got my article I did on Bob Lazar. It started with me and Eric going at it on George Knapp's Facebook page, and I was kind of I was defending the Lazar documentary that Jeremy Corbell was working on, and Eric Davis was criticizing it. I'm like, just let's wait before we criticize it. Let's see it. I don't think it's worth a documentary. So we battled back and forth, and then I privately contacted him, and then he shared some insights. And that's one of the articles I'm going to be working on. I've talked about on Twitter. It's how the Robert Bigelow, Lazar, they had a company together. I think it was Zeta Reticuli, it was called. And something happened where it fell apart. And I want to tell that story via Eric Davis, who's given me permission to talk about it. So I'm going to write about that. And one aspect of why it fell apart, I'm sure there were other problems, but Eric Davis had one specific thing that happened that turned off Bigelow, and that was the end of the company. So hopefully in the next week or so, I'll get that up on the blog.
Can you give us any type of teaser on that?
It's just something that Lazar claimed he could do, and it turned out he couldn't. And Bigelow has put a lot of money into the whole thing, and he was disillusioned. And Eric Davis has talked about it was close to $100,000, maybe. He's talked about it on Twitter. But it's a specific thing that material Lazar said he could manufacture. And he wasn't manufacturing it. There was other ways he was getting it. So that's pretty close to the real story. I'll leave a little tiny bit for the blog.
Sure. Okay. Well, I appreciate that. And so that'll be out in another week or two. So if you're listening to the show down the line, make sure you go over and check out Joe's blog. Yeah. I always get a lot of mail when I talk about Bob Lazar because, the bottom line is, I really don't buy the story. And I know a lot of people don't want to hear that, but I just have never really bought that story. And I feel like I'm trying to be, as we go along here, like it feels like there's more people trying to convince, other people of that whole situation. But anyway, it is what it is, and I'm not going to get into detail because I don't have time to read all the emails that come in.
No, I'm the same way, and the only reason I never dove deep into the Lazar story until probably a year ago. I don't know why, I just didn't buy it. I'm like, about George Knapp is very, he's one of the top guys as far as information about Lazar. So I started watching videos on YouTube, and then I was like, okay, I'm open-minded. And then I was like, all right, there's something here. And then I went to see the premiere in Los Angeles of Jeremy Corbell's movie. And I liked the movie. And actually that night I was going to ask Lazar about that specific incident with Bigelow, but they didn't take questions from the audience, so I didn't get a chance. And right now he's definitely in the gray basket. One big thing, he has, I don't know if you've ever read about his bankruptcy back then. He had this trail of, he owed so much money to so many people. And I don't know, it's like, once again, that does, just because you file bankruptcy doesn't mean you're not telling the truth about something else. And same thing with my story. It doesn't mean he's not telling the truth about Area 51. But another thing that was recent was Linda Moulton Howe said that she spoke to him around 89, right when he first came out. And he told her that, and this was a big issue for everybody. I know people say, well, all right, he lied about his school. That doesn't mean he's lying about everything else. But he told Linda Moulton Howe said that he told her he never went to MIT. He has friends that went to MIT, and he just sat in on a few classes. That's what he told her. And he also told her, I think they made him drink this liquid that I don't know if it messed with his memory. And I'm like, all right, is there anybody else that Lazar told this to? And he did. He told he told Jacques Vallée that in his book. There's a lot. I think it's Revelations, the book, and there's more about Lazar in that book. So you know,
these are all things I've never heard. So I guess you can say, I went to MIT. I can say I went to MIT too because I went to the museum there. Yeah,
there you go.
Anyway, well, that's interesting. So,
but I'll leave open the possibility. I know, George Knapp and Jeremy Corbell, they have more information about the story they can't share. So maybe, maybe if that information comes out, I'll change my mind. But right now, I'd say 60-40 against Lazar. That's where I am.
Wow. Okay. So we speak more or less the same language here.
Yes, on
that particular subject. Now, I have talked about on this show, playing devil's advocate on Lou Elizondo. And I did meet him. He's a really nice, personable guy. But I also thought, wow, that he would make a perfect disinformation agent. But I'm not saying I don't want anyone to get angry at me or whatever. I'm not saying that I think he is. I almost feel as though I have to have an open mind. I mean, this would be absolutely horrible if we've been led down this path once again, but this time it would be 10 times, what it ever had before, like with Bill Moore and, that type of situation. So, but anyway, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, you feel really confident that he's 100% legit?
I do. I mean, I always leave open the possibility of what you just said is, a fact. And if, like you said, it would be horrible for ufology if that was the case. It would be so damaging.
Yes.
If this all turned out to be disinformation for whatever reason. I know there's different theories on why that would be the case, but I don't know if ufology could recover from that. I haven't heard. I tell people I haven't heard Elizondo say anything that I would consider in a different disinformation campaign. Like, he talks about there are objects that are interacting with our military and also with civilians. They're making amazing maneuvers that sometimes defy gravity, and we don't know where they're from. That's basically what he says. So him personally, I don't see anything, as far as disinfo. Now, Tom DeLonge's another story. Tom DeLonge will talk about everything under the sun that we've all heard about over the years, The UFOs and the occupants are responsible for creating religions on this planet, stuff like that. And so, and DeLonge, they've asked him, you think maybe a lot of the stuff you've been told, maybe it's just not, possibly it's not true. And he's, oh, no, these guys wouldn't do that. So maybe along those lines. But
so pardon me for interrupting, but
no problem.
In a way, do you think he could be possibly used as the so-called patsy type of?
He could be, but it's not necessarily a bad thing, and I'll explain. Kit Green, who was head of the CIA weird desk back in, I don't know what dates that was, but he's been quoted. I don't know if it was the movie or if there's a book, Mirage Men. I don't know if you've seen it.
Oh yes, mm-hmm. There's a book and a movie.
I'm not sure if this is from either or both, but the quote from Kit Green is, if you were to give them the core story right off the bat, they'd get sick. So you do it slowly over 10 or 20 years. Hmm. You put out a bunch of movies, a bunch of books, a bunch of stories, a bunch of internet memes about reptilian aliens eating our children, about all the crazy stuff that we've seen recently in Serpo. Then one day you say, hey, all that stuff is nonsense, relax. It's not that bad. You don't have to worry. The reality is this. And then you give them the real story. So it's almost like, is that what they're doing with DeLonge? They're giving him crazy stuff, and then when the real story comes out, it's basically just, hey, there's various groups of extraterrestrials, if that's what they are, visiting the planet. So you guys can relax. They're not here to eat us. They're not here to suck our energy. They're not here to steal our souls. So is that what's going on with DeLonge? I have no idea. I just when I hear him say stuff, I just remain skeptical. I said, just give some evidence. Elizondo, on the other hand, nothing he has said so far has raised any red flags for me.
Okay. What about, I've heard the talk that there's a theory that there's some evil, something evil in regards to the UFOs by some kind of higher ups Have you heard about anything?
What's the same with remote viewing? Remote viewing, there were people in the government that thought it was the work of the devil. And that was part of the reason why the program was canceled. And that's the same thing with when OSAP started. There were senators and, you know, they're known as the Collins Elite. I don't know if there's an official group, but yeah, they think if you open that door, you're letting the devil into our world. So is that the case? I mean, you got to consider all possibilities, but it seems like that's where that originates from.
And I see.
Well, Elizondo covered that a little bit, you know, where he was on Unidentified, the show on History Channel. And one of the remote viewers, I remember it was a quote, it was Third Eye Spies with Russell Targ. It was a remote viewing documentary. And one of the remote viewers, Joe McMonagle, said, one senator or congressman said, you're doing the work of the devil, and one said, you're doing the work of God. So it's like, so it's all stories. Can't prove any of that stuff.
Right. We're talking about Tom DeLonge earlier, and it's, you know, it's pretty evident that he was able to get so far. And I think, you know, some of the people in the UFO world have a bit of jealousy about that. But some people, like myself, are just curious. How the heck did he get as far as he did? And can celebrity do that, celebrity alone? What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, celebrity with the people who he talked to, their kids having an interest in Blink-182. And that's kind of how he explained it with some of the people he met. Like Jim Semivan said, he had never heard of Tom DeLonge, but I don't know. I mean, maybe there were people ready to get the story out for whatever reason. You know, there's been speculation. You know, the environment is about to collapse. We need to do something. So this is part of that. You know, we need to get new energy systems out, you know, technology, and maybe they were ready and he came along at the right time. I don't know. I don't know if, is he being used? I know a lot of people say his story just doesn't make sense. You know, why, you know, he got invited to a barbecue at Lockheed Martin. You know, come on. But who knows? Like you said, maybe celebrity is a rock star, had the access. He had the, you know, I know a lot of people think he gets fooled by fake videos that when he was on Joe Rogan, some of the stuff he talked about.
Yeah, someone just put that in the chat room just a minute ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I don't know. I know he started off working with Stephen Greer, or at least hanging out with Stephen Greer back then, and broke away.
Smart move.
yeah. But, you know, his passion, it's hard to deny his passion. He's so passionate about it. And he had the money to fund himself doing his documentary, and he just made the right contacts. You and I wouldn't be able to do that, but maybe I'll assume, you know, since I don't know anything else, his celebrity was what got him in the door, and it just snowballed from there. He did an interview recently where he told people that he was talking to other people within the intelligence community, but he really wasn't. He had just met them and shook their hands. So he was kind of pumping that up. And the other people say, oh, really? You met them and you're talking to them? So they said, all right, I guess he's legit. We can talk to him. But he hadn't been talking to them. It was just like a little greeting. So, you know, he played the game a little bit and it worked. So I'm happy. So far, I haven't seen anything negative. I'm open-minded. I'm willing to look at the other side. So far, I haven't seen him put a negative spin on TTSA. I know people, it's a money-making scheme.
I hear that more than anything else, I would say, that part of it. I've had explained to me that it's just a way to fund, you know, what they're doing, and nothing more. And I don't think it's, Tom certainly doesn't need the money. And I really, frankly, think that most of the people involved in the whole TTSA, not one of them in there, especially Mr. Mellon.
Definitely not Mellon.
Need any money. So I don't think it's anything about making money, but I do think it's a little bit polluted when, you know, everything's mixed in together. I think, you know, maybe it is a way to raise money, but, you know, I mean, the commercializing of it and stuff like that is kind of, to me, takes away a little bit from it.
Right. Yeah, a lot of people don't like that they're doing that. I had the issues with, you know, I'm not going to be totally 100% if I don't agree with something. When they did Unidentified, the last episode where they did the Italian UFO group.
Yeah,
the last one. And that case, I'm like, I just wasn't really impressed with that UFO helicopter case. You know, maybe there's more data that they have that we haven't seen. That's what convinced them. But for me, it was like, I didn't like that as a good way to end the series. The Harry Reid quote was, for me, that was great. That was the highlight of the series for me.
I can't recall exactly what that was. Can you explain what he said?
I can if I could find the quote, which I had it queued up. He was asked about Bob Bigelow. He said Mellon was interviewing him, and Mellon said, you know, Bob Bigelow recently said that he believes there are aliens on this planet. Don't quote me exactly, but Mellon's talking to Reid, and he says, do you believe the same thing, that there are aliens on this planet? And Reid says, it would be bad for my credibility in Congress if I talked about everything I knew. And when I heard that, I'm like, what? I'm like, wow. What do you know? It's like, what do you know that you're talking, you know, with that follow-up? So that was, I really want to know what Harry Reid knows. I don't think he's going to tell us, but. So that was really interesting to me, and it was like the last episode, and I was like, all right, that's a great quote. At least we have that. I wasn't happy with the Italian UFO thing, but Reid saved the day on that episode.
Right. Let's for the person that didn't get a chance to watch that and won't watch it, actually, on Unidentified. It was actually the Italian. They were in Italy, and they were talking with, I can't remember what officials that they were, and there's one guy that actually spoke very good English, but. It was basically, didn't the helicopter shoot the, I mean, didn't the UFO shoot the helicopter or something, zapped it or something?
Allegedly, it was shot by a beam, maybe electromagnetic ray or beam, and it had a damage to the rotor. The helicopter went down. Rotor,
that's right, yeah.
Yeah, and the helicopter went down. But it wasn't, you know, people didn't die. It just had to make a landing, an emergency landing. And the quote, I do have the exact quote from Reid, but yeah, so basically that was their big information they gave to TTSA. And there was a little scene there where the Italian guy's like, we'll give you information if you give us. That's how it is.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
I can't say for sure, but it's like it seemed a little set up to me because I've worked in I've been on a lot of shows, and that particular spot look set up. It seemed like, you know, I don't know. That's just my opinion. But there were other things in that episode. They showed some of the new people who work on the current version of ATIP, which we don't know the name of it. You know, they were, you know, their faces were blacked out. And I know people will say, well, we don't know if they're really working ATIP. You know, Elizondo, history can be pulling our leg. I'm like, no, I personally don't think Elizondo would make up people and say they're in the program and then, you know, put them on the show. That was another thing, yeah. That program's still going on now, and he's spoken about that.
Right. Well, overall, I really liked the series Unidentified myself.
Me too. I thought it was
very well done. All right, we are at the break, so we're going to be going into break right now. My guest tonight is Joe Murgia, and we'll be right back right after these messages. All right, everyone, that's it for the free part of the show. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with the J3 team. It's about a movie coming out on the first part of September. We're going to be discussing that. It's UFO and abduction related. And it will be with the executive producer from that particular movie. And I want to thank the people that have helped out with this show. Alejandro Rojas, our guest, of course, and some people behind the scenes. Race over at KGRA Radio. Anyone can listen to the full two-hour shows live, of course. You can also catch it over at YouTube. But if you're looking to get it in your media player and with all the archives as well, the full two-hour show, for only $2 or more a month, you can help us out. There's also over at Patreon, you can support us over there, and I'll hook you up to the full shows. That's it for now, and remember to keep your eyes to the sky.